Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers' journey through the wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends Tom and Harry. Join us as we make our way through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Your hosts for today are my fellow Trek actors, Armin Shimerman, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong.
For the complete and exciting version of this podcast, check out patreon.com/theDeltaFlyers and sign up to become a patron today and get all that bonus material. Welcome, everybody.
Welcome, everyone. And everyone, sign up now. Do it now. Don't wait.
Do it now. Put this on pause. Go check out patreon.com. It's an amazing spot for lots of extra stuff. Yeah.
Armin is giving all of you homework right now. Sign up. Okay.
Do you have, Armin, any like directing techniques when you're directing theater, like processes that you go through with the actors?
I give them lots of freedom for the first 2 weeks. Whatever you want. Come up with some ideas. Okay. What I also do is in the first couple of days, I set the blocking. And then I say to them after the blocking is set, that's just temporary. If you want to do something different, you can. But you have something to start off with. Great. Then for the first 2 weeks, I let them do whatever they want, find their own epiphanies, their own ideas. Mm. And then after the second, after the beginning of the third week, I start to say, now we need to start cementing things. So there can still be room for improvement. But let's just call this, the cement is laid. It hasn't solidified yet, but there's the cement.
Great.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Do you expect your actors to be all off book on the first in the first rehearsal then? The
very usually first? No, but in this rehearsal, yes.
Mm. Wow. Great.
Because they're older. And I know what that's like. And two, it's really not fun for actors when one actor is trying to be in the moment and the other actor is fumbling for words. It's very just true. It's not fair for the actor who's having to wait, and it's not fair really for the actor who's stumbling as well.
That makes sense.
The way you describe your technique of kind of giving the actors some blocking to start with, that's how I approach when I'm doing TV directing, is I always have I come to set in that rehearsal with some blocking ideas, and I kind of do a mixture of what you're talking about. You know, we'll read it through first on set, and then I'll say, all right, well, I was thinking, what if you came in this door, and what if you headed to this side of the room? And I'll start to, you know, give them some fundamentals that would fit the plan that I have ahead of time. But I'm always adaptable to, if the actor says, yeah, I could come in that door, but what if I say the first line from the other room, and then I come in, And I'm doing this, and all of a sudden that starts, you know, then I start spinning. Oh, that's interesting. If you're doing that, then you might head here. So yeah, we sort of start collaborating, but I always want to have something for them to start with.
You know? And your operative word there is absolutely right. Collaboration.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. It's an ensemble working together.
Yeah.
It should not be dictatorial. It should be an ensemble working together.
Did you feel that way on Deep Space Nine? Did you feel like when you rehearse scenes, or did it depend on the director?
Certainly the director would say just what you said. You know, you come in from this door, you go there, and we would rehearse it. And then after we felt slightly comfortable with that, they would put down the marks. And those were the marks that we would use, because if we start moving around and not hitting our marks, then the camera people don't know where to focus the camera. The focus puller doesn't know where the focus is. So again, an ensemble. It's not just the actors. It's the entire crew. Yeah. And you want to make sure that everybody's happy. It is actually, it's one of the things I want to talk about a little bit later, actually. Thank you for posing this.
Yeah.
One of the tragedies of doing TV is that usually you get the script, the actors anyway, get the script For Deep Space Nine, we were lucky if we got the script 48 hours before we started shooting.
Same with us.
And there isn't enough time to really delve into what's happening in the script. I spent most of my time trying to memorize the lines and thinking about, okay, what would I do? When you have more time, you can sort of forget about the trees and look at the forest. And in this episode, there's a couple of times when I went, oh, I didn't really think that through enough. But it's because I only had 48 hours, you know.
I think both of you are very smart in your directing processes to be collaborative and to be open, because as an actor, I feel that the directors that I have not been so fond of were the ones that had a very rigid game plan going in. And when I bring up a suggestion, they're immediately like, nope, 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 let's stick with what I just came up with or my way. And to me, I just feel like, well, you didn't even listen to me.
You're
You're
stuck
on a
on your
mission. You're
plan, and
so exactly. And the fact that both of you, Armin in theater and Robbie in television, take this collaborative outlook to begin with is, I think, the right way, at least for the actor to feel
What
like
makes it
he
better
means
in the end?
something.
Like, yeah, it's you're getting the best ideas from everybody instead of just your one narrow, which is, often a director can have great ideas. They've spent a lot of time, more time than the actors often, a lot more
That's
time,
right. That's right.
with the script and looking at all of the variables that the actors aren't even aware of, in terms of the whatever the concept, the tone meetings you have or the production limitations that they're not even aware of. So the director will have a lot of time, but if you don't take advantage of the actor's creativity, they've spent time looking at it from a different perspective.
And they've known the characters,
They know the
certainly the
characters
series
much
regulars
better.
and the recurring characters know their characters better than the director does.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I must say, this is why I insisted with my ensemble, my smaller ensemble, to meet on weekends so that we could have these discussions, because it wasn't going to happen on the set
No
because things
time.
move too fast. So we would get together to try to suss these things out, the very collaborative things that we've been talking about.
I remember once it was on Voyager. There was a scene. I think it was early on in Sandrine's bar, that holodeck program. And I had a lot of lines in there, and I was supposed to be playing pool. And for me, I was having trouble learning the lines over the weekend. And so I started moving around. I set up a set for myself, and I literally came up with blocking to help me. Oh, if I move over here, it's connected to this line. If I move over here, it helped me memorize. And I remember going on set and thinking, oh, I hope the director doesn't mess up what I planned, because I was having trouble remembering, and this is helping me if I could just do what I planned. And luckily he or she did, and I was able to do what I had rehearsed at home, which helped me remember the lines and sequence. And but I'm sure I did that more than once, but trying to connect the physicality to the words helped me sometimes, because I was not a good memorizer.
I think that's awesome. Armin, this is the first time I've ever heard him talk about his process on that particular scene. And I do remember when we were blocking that, when we were rehearsing that, Robbie had he had everything. He walked over to one side of the pool table and then he would say something and he would take the cue stick and do the chalk thing like that. He'd say a lot.
I don't
Then he would
remember
move
that.
over and then he would go to shoot and he'd look up at me and he'd say another line. And I said, wow, it almost seems like he's already pre-blocked this. And you did. You
I
did do it at
did.
home.
I
So now I
did.
know the secret. Okay.
That's funny.
Well, when we would get together, the Ferengi would get together at my house, we would do all that. And then Max would say at the very end of the session, always, he would say, and now, how is the director going to f us up on this?
Exactly.
Oh, very funny. We have a birthday. So, first of all, I'd just like to say, Stacy Davis, March 7th is your birthday. So, happy, happy birthday to Stacy.
Happy birthday, Stacy.
Happy birthday, Stacy Davis.
How about some poetry? How about a little bit of a
Yes.
limerick from Robbie? It would be great.
Little limerick. A little limerick
A
for
little
you.
limerick
Okay, here we go.
from the wee lad McNeil.
The Grand Negus arrives with a new book. It has a whole new Ferengi outlook. Bashir might win a prize. His true feelings are disguised. Ram filled his pockets with some charity he took.
That's clever.
Very good.
Yes, there's
And
my
you got
little
in the B
limerick.
storyline as well. And that's usually what I cannot do in the haiku. Not enough
Got
room.
not enough room, yeah.
No. My haiku for profit motive. Grand Nagus is back. He's revised the Book of Rules. Quark meets with prophets. That's
Nice.
it.
Yeah,
Thanks.
you could not
Excellent.
much room for the B story, but you
No,
got the
not
A
much
story
room.
covered. You got a
Yeah.
lot of the A story
All
in
the
there.
A's covered.
Very nice.
Yes. That's good. All right. Well,
Armin, what about your
etymology. Yes.
etymology?
So, both words, profit and motive. So, profit comes from the Middle English and also from the French prophète, and it means one who speaks for God or any deity as the inspired revealer or interpreter of his or her will. Its original use in English was in 1175. That's for the
Wow.
word prophet. Motive comes from the French motif, something moved or brought forward, emotion. Its original use was in 1362.
Okay, let's talk about this episode, written by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolff, and directed, of course, by René Auberjonois, his very first directing effort on Deep Space Nine. Guest stars we have, once again, Max Gradenchik as Rom. We have Juliana Donald as Emmy. Now, this actress actually did an episode of TNG where she was credited as Julie Donald. She didn't add the Anna until Deep Space Nine, but she did do one episode of TNG beforehand. And of course, Tiny Ron as Mae Hardu. And we also have co-star Bennett Guillory as the medical big shot. Bennett Guillory was also nominated for an award for his role on August Wilson's play, The Piano Lesson.
Oh, wow.
And you forgot the big shot guest star.
The big show. Oh, Wally Shawn.
Oh, of course. Duh.
Of
Okay.
course.
Ed Walsh. Yes. As
The big shot.
the big shot guest star. Exactly. Yeah. We have the big sh medical big shot and the actual big shot, Ferengi big shot. Perfect. And Walsh, excuse me.
Yes. I don't know if you guys know that, and maybe your viewers don't know it, but Wally is one of the great American playwrights.
Yeah.
He has written some astounding plays that were done off Broadway that became very famous. And he's just his father was the head of the writing editorial department, I think I've got that right, of the New Yorker magazine. And
Oh.
Wally told me when he was growing up, the most famous of famous writers used to come to dinner, and they would all eat together, and he would hear stories and literary anecdotes from some of America's greatest writers.
It's amazing.
Wow. Is it My Dinner with Andre? Is that?
Yes, yeah. That's a
Yeah.
play that he acted in. He didn't write, but that's a play he acted in,
Yeah.
which
And
they rehearsed for 2 years.
they rehearsed it forever. I remember they performed it in, at the time, it was the New Amsterdam Theater before it was renovated. They performed it in this enormous, it was where the Ziegfeld Follies happened. And this theater on 42nd Street had fallen into disrepair. It was basically kind of condemned at that point. And they decided to do My Dinner with Andre, this two-person, two-character play in this theater that was just decrepit and just falling apart.
Yeah.
And it was a ticket everybody. I didn't get a chance to see it there because
I
I
didn't
could.
see it either. I heard about it, but I never saw it.
It
I
was
wish I
an
had. I wish I had.
event. It
Yeah, it
was
was an event.
the play, the content, the performers, and also the space that they were performing in, all of it. Yeah. He's a very from a different time. It's a generation that and a kind of culture that I think doesn't exist anymore. But he comes from that. Very interesting guy.
Exactly. And he told me growing up he didn't want to be a writer. Didn't want to be a writer at all because his father had been a writer and everybody around him had been a writer. He didn't want to follow in those footsteps. And so he went into the Peace Corps.
Oh, wow.
And when he came out of the Peace Corps, he was looking for work. He couldn't find any work and he was starving. He was a starving actor. And he saw a competition where if you wrote something and you won first prize, you would get a pocket full of money. And so he said, maybe I should go for that. Maybe I could get some money that way. He didn't win, but unfortunately, or fortunately for him, because it started the muscle of writing, he began to write more and more. And as we all of us have said, he's just a great writer and a great storyteller and a phenomenal person, very kind, very funny. And if I haven't told the story, I won't tell much more of it. But the only person I ever was really jealous of was Wally Shawn. It lasted for about 5 minutes. It might have been during this episode. but I was the green-eyed envy welled up in me, and I was
because
ready
of his
to
talent?
Kill Wally. Yes, talent, ability, charm, character,
just his whole life.
Humor, everything about him just pissed me off. And that lasted for about 4 or 5 minutes, and I went, oh, this is why some actors get
jealousy.
Angry. At
yeah. Interesting.
And then it disappeared, and I never had it again.
Interesting.
So what made it disappear? Just being in his presence?
Just sensible. I just went, realized, what the hell are you thinking, funny. Armin? What the? It's not his fault he's so good.
Right.
And it was enough to teach me a major life lesson, which was, yes, you can be envious of people, but don't let it get ugly. Don't just realize everybody's entitled to what they have.
Yeah. The origins of the teleplay for this episode are to be found in Ira Stephen Bear's early career. When he was trying to make it in Hollywood, he wrote a spec script for the TV show Taxi, entitled Uncle Sylvester, to try to demonstrate his writing abilities. So the plot revolved around Sylvester, uncle to the main character, Louie. Sylvester had built up a reputation for being a shameless womanizer and an altogether unpleasant individual, and he was Louis's hero. So Louis was dying to meet him to impress him with his own womanizing abilities, but when Sylvester arrives, he no longer enjoys womanizing, and now he just wants to get back with his wife. Louis is heartbroken and becomes convinced that Sylvester has undergone some kind of deep psychological trauma. So this is...
Interesting.
Yeah.
So he wrote that Taxi script. It never got made.
No, because he sent it in.
A sample.
It was never. Yeah. It was never purchased by the producers of Taxi. But
so he got it done anyway.
Yeah, in DS9, basically the idea. Yeah. So yeah, it's a good idea though.
Very cool.
I should also point out this became clear to me as more actors became directors on our show. Almost invariably, the first episode that each of the actor directors got to do was always a Ferengi episode.
Interesting. Wow.
The origins of the plot line involving Bashir's nomination for the Carrington Award are to be found in real life, with this plot actually being something of an inside joke. During its 7th year, Star Trek The Next Generation was nominated for Best Dramatic Series at the Emmys Awards. Nobody gave it the slightest chance to win because, generally speaking, science fiction shows didn't win awards like that. We all know about that. Mm-hmm. Everyone expected NYPD Blue to win. However, despite the unlikely event of a victory, some members of the TNG team became convinced that they were actually going to win. As it turned out, they didn't. But neither did NYPD Blue. Instead, the award went to the unexpected Picket Fences.
Picket Fences.
If you look at this episode, it's also the unexpected winner that they have to deal with as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, Kitty tells a story. A week after I was cast on Deep Space Nine, according to Kitty, I really don't remember. I was cast as a series regular on Picket Fences.
What?
And she says, I said to Picket Fences, I've already got a show. Thank you very much.
I wonder what role.
Oh, I know exactly which role. It was
which
the
role?
Coroner. The coroner. There was a coroner on Picket Fences.
Oh.
And we often discuss, she and I, over dinner, what would our lives have been like if that offer had come in first?
Oh, my gosh.
Interesting.
You would not be co-hosting the Delta Flyers with us.
I would not
be
doing that.
You would not be going to conventions.
No.
You would not. No. Yeah, I knew some actors on Picket Fences, and that show was a big hit.
Yeah.
But it doesn't live on now. I mean, I bet if you ask the average person, they wouldn't even know the title.
I have one final thing before you jump into the first scene, Robbie. So this episode introduces the dartboard. used by Bashir and O'Brien, which soon became a permanent fixture in Quark's.
Oh.
Originally, the producers wanted to use a pool table. And this goes to Robbie's story that he told us at the beginning about Sandrine's and his preparation for shooting pool. But they were told that Star Trek Voyager had the same plan. So that's why they veered away from the pool table.
Oh, that's funny.
Because of Sandrine's at your holodeck program, Robbie. But then they suggested that they have the Deep Space Nine characters play cards. But that had already been done on Next Generation. So darts was the final thing that they settled upon because of.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask Robbie, I've always been told, I don't know, but I've always been told that shooting around a table is rather difficult. So
it's
shooting around
difficult.
A pool table must be equally as difficult.
It's even more difficult because of the continuity of the balls and where they're sitting from one shot to the next. They have to always be matching, and you're hoping that actors can play pool a little bit. Pool is not a smart
choice.
Story device. No. Yeah. Darts is much safer because you throw the dart off camera and then you cut to, you make that an insert on another day where the darts are hitting the board. You don't even have to shoot it on the same day. All right. Well, let's dive into it. The plot begins in Quark's. We see Quark in a close-up getting an ear massage.
Yeah.
Looks like Umox or something.
Yeah, it's Umox. Umox.
It's Umox. Yeah, he's getting this lobe massage, and we meet a woman named Emmy who's doing it, and she's trying to make a deal for some self-sealing stem bolts that could triple her family's business output. She really wants these stem bolts, wants to sign a contract, but her family won't be back for a week. And Quark says, you know, there's no rush to sign this deal. Just keep rubbing those lobes. Doorbell rings. Quark thinks it's the Saurian brandy he ordered. But it's Rom. Rom says, get this female out of here. And suddenly, the Negus appears. He's hooded,
Actually,
though.
He doesn't. Mehardu appears with a cloaked figure.
With a cloaked figure, exactly.
Yeah.
And I saw Emmy in the background in this shot, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm going to use the word overacting. I was suspicious because of the way she was looking. And I thought, uh-oh, she's part of some plan, which turns out is not. But I think her big reaction to me was very distracting. It was like, what's going on? She's part of something that's dangerous. Or...
Yeah. What I saw in that was that she realized, oh my God, this is the head of the Ferengi homeworld. Mm. And I'm in the presence of royalty, which didn't make any sense to me at all because there would be no way that she would know who Zek was.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. So you noticed that reaction too, because she's deep in the background, but it drew focus from the moment and felt like a plot point, something that was going to pay off later.
You're right. But the main thing that draws your focus, Robbie, is that she's doing a lot of this. She's like shifting around.
Yeah, she's
like, what's
leaning.
Happening? Like, hey,
yes,
it's almost like, whoa, bring it in just a little bit. You know, you don't have to do all that. So I think that's what distracted
And maybe
me.
It was and a me. Mis. Maybe it was a misdirect. Maybe Renee, as director, thought, oh, well, this kind of storyline is so peripheral, but I can make it feel like something. I don't know. Something else, something more.
Speaking of something more or deep background, I asked myself, why do we need a pornographic scene at the top of this episode?
Yeah, I agree.
What does it do for the episode? Nothing. Why do we start the show with, in Ferengi terms, a pornographic scene?
Yeah.
It doesn't advance the
plot.
Doesn't
go anywhere?
It doesn't. It only sort of says, don't take this episode seriously.
Yeah. It feels comedic in a sense because of the way that it opens.
And if you think twice about it it's ugly.
Okay. It's ugly. It is, but this, Armin, let me just again be the flip side of the coin here. What if Renee decided to direct it so that you, as Quark, are basically bamboozling her to rub your ears. Like she doesn't know that this is sexual. You see what I'm saying? Like, if you're like, oh, you know, I seem to have a pain. And can you please, you know, massage the pain that
it would have
that
shown
like,
his cleverness.
Ultimate manipulation. But it did come off very sexual and that she knew that it was sexual.
Oh, absolutely.
So I agree with you. I agree with you 1,000%. But I think it could have been filmed differently. And also, Yes, there could have been some things that could have made it much better, I feel.
It bothered me watching it, and I'm going, why do we need this? Of all the ways to start an episode, why start it this way?
Before we move on, self-sealing stem bolts is something that the late Aaron Eisenberg would always talk about at conventions, in that having the Ferengi teeth in, it was very difficult for him to say that. Now, was that the case for you as well, to
I
say
would
that?
imagine so.
Okay.
Yeah, I
I
would
would
think so
imagine
too. We're in the infirmary. Bashir is working hard. He's reading some pad or doing something. And Sisko makes a call, asks him to come to his quarters. And Bashir is surprised and says, okay, on my way. And then we cut inside the wardroom and Bashir walks in. And this is where I saw Renee's credit, by the way, over the scene. As the crowd applauded, I think there was Renee's credit. I was like, did he time it this way so that his name? I know he
Wait, so
didn't.
wait, as they're applauding, his name pops
I
up,
think
or the name
so. I
pops up,
think
and then they clap.
it was right around that moment. I was like, did he want his first director credit to have some big applause? Anyway,
That's very funny.
yes,
I wouldn't put it
surprise.
beneath Renee. I wouldn't put it there. I don't think he did, but I wouldn't put it beneath him.
Right. Well, the timing of the credits, the directors have no, that's all the post producer rolling that out according to contracts and all kinds of things. So
So
it's
it's
just
just coincidence, but
often
it's very,
random.
yeah,
It's
but it's very
novel.
funny that Armin says, like, I wouldn't put it beneath him, though.
Exactly. Yeah, so everybody cheers, Bashir walking in, and we learn that Julian's been nominated for the Carrington Medical Award, which is like the Oscars, I guess. You know, it's a big award. But he seems very confused and in shock, basically. He wants to go back to work. And the whole group is very confused. And Dax follows him out to a turbo lift. She says he should be excited. You know, this is a big honor. It's the Federation's most prestigious medical award. And Bashir's kind of dismissing it, blowing it off. They continue to walk. Bashir tells Dax he's far too young to get this award. It's intended to be the crowning achievement near the end of a doctor's career. He doesn't want to talk about it or give it any more thought. And Dax ends the scene being very impressed with his maturity, that he seems very, you know, disconnected, very dispassionate about it. That's Bashir's point of view on this award.
There's a shot in this scene where the four series regulars are shoulder to shoulder with each other that I rather liked. I also liked the fact they didn't have to put in all the background people who were as regular on the show as I was. And I went, it's very nice that Renee not only included series regulars, but also the stand-ins and the background people that we were very used to seeing every day. So, kudos to Renee or the second AD, whosever idea it was, but included the other people as well.
Familiar faces to you guys.
Familiar
That's
faces.
great. This whole storyline, by the way, and so now this storyline is set up. I will say it felt a little thin. I feel like there's a lot more explaining to do, that there was an opportunity that was not, you know, taken advantage of in this storyline.
I'll get to this all later, but this whole episode to me is thin.
Oh,
Really?
really?
Oh,
Oh, we're gonna have
no.
to agree to disagree because I really enjoyed this episode a
I
lot.
did
But
too.
my biggest complaint would be in this Bashir storyline. It doesn't feel fully fleshed out.
But
And
is
it
it,
wouldn't
Robbie,
have,
is it
yeah.
thin? Is it still thin for you as a B storyline? Isn't it an
Yes.
adequate beast? It is for you.
Yes.
Okay.
I would disagree with that too. N nothing happens. Literally, nothing happens.
Yeah, nothing happens, and it could happen. There could be a character journey here that echoes the themes of this episode in a way and could have been explored, but they didn't flesh it out. So we'll get there when we get there. We go to Rom's quarters next. We learn that Rom lives in a mess. We learn that he's a hoarder and his place is a wreck. But Quark is staying here with his brother while the Negus uses Quark's room. And Quark calls for Rom, who's brushing his lobes with an electric lobe brush, I guess. Like an electric toothbrush, but it's a electric
I'm not
lobe
sure that he's
brush.
brushing them, but he's cleaning out his lobes.
Cleaning them, yes. Yes.
I guess brushing is possible, yes.
Yeah, it looks like a electric toothbrush to me.
Yeah, but
Or
it's
maybe the whisker that you put in like frothers to froth milk or
it's
something.
An electric Q-tip is what it is.
Yes, exactly.
And let's not gloss over the very beginning of this scene, Robbie, when we see Quark ordering a glass of millipede juice. Hold the shells. You remember? I mean,
yes. Sounds delicious.
Yes. Insect juice. Who would have known? Okay.
Oh, no, the Ferengi eats insects.
Right. That's no. Yeah, of course. We've already established that. We've seen it when.
I didn't know you could juice the insects.
I didn't know you could juice the insects, but clearly you can. You can juice anything.
You can juice anything. Exactly. Yeah.
All the shells. I love it.
Quark calls Rom, though. Rom comes out, cleaning the lobes. Quark wants the place cleaned up. This place is a mess. And Rom basically says, well, Nog usually does that, but he's off visiting family right now. And Quark, notices all these things from the bar. He starts listing off. Oh, you took this from the bar. You took that from the bar. They basically get into a fight because Rom's like, you may be the boss of the bar, but I'm the boss here and I'll do it how I want. So we see a bit of conflict. Yeah.
And again, we've seen a bit of conflict in the last Ferengi encounter as well, mm-hmm. at least I was involved with, which is Rom is beginning to stand up to Quark. Yeah. He's beginning to say no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And good for Rom.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're right. It echoes kind of Nog's journey of wanting to better himself, which is a big theme in this episode that, you know, Quark is going to articulate to the prophets later on. But like, this idea of profit or bettering yourself or improving your life, having a goal, being driven by goals and improvement. That's a Ferengi value that's very relatable.
Exactly.
The scenes with you and Max are some of the best I've seen so far in this episode.
I agree.
Fabulous. And just to be able to see Max or the character of Rom opening up like a flower in a way. You know what I'm saying? He's been so closed off, and all of a sudden he's everywhere. And that and we will be coming up to a scene where I'll talk about it where I thought it was just superior. It was so
great,
so well done.
I will agree with you. Max and my relationship is golden. It's and it got better and better as the years went by, as we became more and more trustful of each other and knew what we did, each of us did well. Again, have a problem with the fact that is it necessary for us to squabble this much? Squabbling is good. It's like a spice. I think there's just a little too much salt in this particular stew.
Okay.
Yeah. That's fair.
But on the other hand, this sort of behavior, Max is brilliant at.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant at.
Yeah.
And I learned years later that the writers knew this too, that he was very good at this. So this is an opportunity, as you said, for Max to shine. And although I have a problem with it, I don't think Max would. And to give Max his due, let him shine. Let him show what he's really good at. And that's a good thing. And that's a good thing.
So on the level of quibbles, of being Mr. Quibbles and Bits, this is a minor quibble then, correct?
Yes, it's a minor quibble.
Okay. Thank you.
Leave them as comic characters. That's who they are. They're Abbott and Costello.
Yeah, it did feel a bit Abbott and Costello, but Abbott and Costello is classic. And I mean, you had that and I think depth of both your individual characters explored in this episode in a great way.
Yes, we did.
That's what's so satisfying for me is that you're incredibly watchable and entertaining just on a comic, you know, watchability level.
Yeah.
But also these characters, I learned something about both of them. Yeah. Individually and as in their relationship in this episode that I never saw before, and I really enjoyed it. So
thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, Armin, you are most certainly entitled to your critiques and your opinions, but I just want to say, please don't be so hard on yourself.
Because I really good.
I can't,
there's a lot of great
I can't
stuff.
Peel my eyes away from the screen when you guys are acting. It's like, you know, scenes, I can walk and go get a drink, but I'm not going to go get a drink.
I would say the same thing. I've seen episodes of your show where there's other actors. And I'm like, I know where this is going, and I get what you're doing. It's not as watchable. You are moment to moment. You and Max together, and Wally, and this whole storyline, Tiny Ron, everybody is playing their part in a beautiful tapestry of this world and these characters that I loved. I really did.
Thank you. You talk about excessive spice at times, but there are also some very, very, very nuanced layers going
Yes.
on where I had to rewind. I go, wait, let me just catch that quick little reaction that Rom
Yeah.
gave to Cork. I missed that. So I had to do some rewind to get everything because it was such a full palette
Yeah.
happening. Okay.
I
So that's where
agree.
I'm
It
coming
was
from.
the comedy, the pathos, all of it was there. I thought it was
Yeah.
great.
Thank you. And that all of this is why all of us would get together on the weekend.
Well, it's smart. You guys knocked it out of the
It pays
park.
off.
You
It
really
pays off.
did. I mean, if we could, in hindsight, if I had a time machine, I'd go back and I'd say, Robbie, we got to rehearse these. You know, we got to rehearse our
Absolutely.
scenes right now before we even show up, which we never
You can
did. We never did
no.
that.
You can feel the work and the chemistry that that work has built
Heck
in
yeah.
the performances in a way that you don't feel that with the other characters on your
Heck
show.
yeah. For sure. Thank you. Okay.
It shows. Quark decides to go and he's gonna get his room back from the Negus. He steps out of a door, realize that their rooms are 3 feet apart. That I
Across from
had
each
no
other.
idea. They're
We didn't
right
know
there. It seems like he's storming off to go, you know, to another level.
that.
But he
Yeah.
storms out and it's right there. I
Armin,
loved it.
has it been established before this that you guys are,
No,
I don't think
no,
so. We don't
no.
know that you're across
I
the royal
love
hall.
that. I love the staging of it.
Yeah.
By the way, Renee did a lot of, I don't know if it's his work as an actor in sitcoms and comedy, but he framed this episode in a way that platformed the comedy beautifully in a way that not all Star Trek directors were helpful with the comedy side of things. And he did a really nice job at a number of places. Like that shot of just seeing you walk across the hall and that sort of flat shot is very funny. And
Right.
if it had been filmed any other way, it
It
would
would not
not
have been
have
funny.
been, no, it would have
No.
just been somebody walking to another place.
Yeah. Well, Renee was famous outside of Star Trek, as well as Star Trek, but outside as a comic actor. Just brilliant. A brilliant comic stage actor who did some extraordinary work on the stage as comic characters.
Well, he gets it. He knows what it looks like, when it's funny, where to sit and watch from to make it funny, and he put the camera there.
And
It's
did you
great.
know he was a teacher, professor at Juilliard? And that's what he taught? He taught clowning?
I did not
What?
know that.
Yeah. What?
Wow, I did not know that. I was there at Juilliard in the 80s. He wasn't there when I was there, but
I think he was there because he and Hausman were very close. Hausman
it would have
made
been
Renee's
before me.
career. Hausman made Renee. Hausman was the founder of Juilliard.
Of Juilliard, yeah.
Okay.
And at least of the acting program, and he may have been one of the original teachers, but he taught clown and mask work. Mask work, dell'arte,
One of my favorite
commedia
classes.
dell'arte.
Robbie loves
Yeah.
it.
I love mask work. We had a
Yeah.
great teacher when I was there named Pierre Lefebvre was
Yeah.
his name. Did
So,
wonderful mask work.
do you know when Renee was at Juilliard doing this
If
teach?
he
So.
was a Hausman protege or actor, then it was before my time because Michael Langham ran the school when I was there in the
Okay. Hausman
mid
was not
80s.
doing it when you were
No,
there.
Hausman had
Okay.
left years
So
before,
pre-you is what you're
probably
saying.
pre my days.
Okay. Renee grew up next door to Hausman.
Oh, wow.
Wow. And Hausman recognized in Renee his comic ability
Yeah.
and promoted Renee when he was a young man.
Okay.
And that's how Renee's career got started.
Yeah.
A lot of people might know John Houseman from The Paper Chase,
Right.
the movie and TV series, or
That's
just
right.
the,
That's right. No,
yeah,
both.
both. And he was very well known from that TV show, that work.
Right.
But he had such a deep career in the theater.
He was the producer, or one of the producers of the Mercury Theater that Orson Welles was a part of. Many things, many
Many,
things,
yes,
many, many
iconic things.
wonderful, yeah, iconic things.
Armin, you talk about Renee having some amazing theater performances as a comic in comic performances. What plays are you talking about? Like that
Well, he's
would be
famous for
his.
having done Tartuffe.
Okay.
I understand everybody who ever saw that production, including my wife, just said beyond. It was extraordinary performance. In Lear, he played Fool. I understand he was super and great as that. He was a longtime leading man character comic actor at ACT in San Francisco,
That's right.
where he developed his chops, where he did Tartuffe long before he got into film. And in fact, got discovered while he was working at ACT in San Francisco when he got his first film role, which was MASH, and he played Father Mulcahy.
Oh.
ACT in San Francisco back in the 60s and into the 70s was the premier classical theater company and school. In fact, I wanted to go to ACT. That was the school I wanted to go to. It was such a highly respected school. And the year I got into ACT and Juilliard, I decided to stay in New York because I had already been living there. It was more out of convenience than anything, but ACT was my dream. That was, great
So
school.
wait, so ACT was your preference over Juilliard? You would have, if all things were equal, you would have taken ACT over
At
Juilliard.
that Juilliard gave you a great education. ACT gave you work.
You were part of a company there. Denzel Washington went to ACT training program, and a lot of amazing actors. It was
Salome
very highly,
Jens was out of ACT.
great, great company. Well, good. A little more history. This is a history episode of the podcast. We've crossed the hallway. Quark knocks on the door or rings the door, and but then Quark, you think Quark's going to talk to the Negus, but instead he tells Rom, "You're going to talk to the Negus and tell him to leave." And Quark hides behind the door. And Zek comes out, a very friendly Zek. He's excited to have company. He invites him in.
And knows Rom's name. Come in, my boy Rom. Come in.
But the
He
setup
knows
is,
Rom's name.
because the setup is Quark, right before they answer the door, before Zek answers the door, you say like, it's got to be, he knows me too well. It's got to be you. He barely even knows you exist,
Yes,
is what you
exactly.
say. And then when he
And
goes,
then he knows his
Rom,
name.
my dear boy. Very funny. It's so comedic already.
Well, we're inside Quark's quarters. The place is empty, which, by the way, this reminded me, this shot, of when we would be on stage wandering around between, setups, some of our other sets and our
That would have
swing
nothing in
sets
there.
that would have nothing in them. This shot, just I had a sensory flashback to walking around, when away from where we were filming to these empty generic rooms that they would redress and things. It was,
Like Janeway's quarters or
yes,
Tuvok's quarters, and it's
exactly.
completely empty.
Completely empty. But Zek's emptied the quarters. He says the furniture was getting in the way of his work. And he finally shares that he's revised the rules of acquisition book, and he hands the book to them. Quark and Rom are thrilled. They're excited. They open it up. They begin to read. The first thing they read is, "If they want their money back, give it to them." What?
But that's not the funny. The funny is when they go on Mehardu, he's crying and just
He's crying in the corner. There we go. A new rules of acquisition book. We have a little commercial break.
Robbie, have I told you that I've been using this amazing VPN called NordVPN?
Oh, wow. I've heard about VPNs, but I am a Starship pilot, so I'm not exactly sure what they do.
Let me give you the technobabble description. A VPN is a secure connection between your computer and a remote server managed by the VPN provider. An encrypted tunnel, kind of like a wormhole, is created through which all your data is sent securely. Robbie, you know how I spend at least half of my time in Canada. Well, before using NordVPN, I had all these different streaming apps that would only work while I was in the US. I would fly to Canada and I would be out of region. So now I'm able to access all the apps I normally use in the States so that I feel like I'm getting full usage of all my streaming subscriptions.
Amazing.
With NordVPN, you can protect your private data like bank details and passwords. You can protect your data while traveling and using public Wi-Fi. Very important. NordVPN threat protection feature protects you from viruses and malicious malware. And one NordVPN account can be used on up to 10 devices.
So you're saying that I could use NordVPN to watch the third season of Resident Alien that just dropped in the US while I'm still here in Canada working?
Yes, you can definitely use NordVPN to watch your show. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to our link, nordvpn.com/delta, which will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We come back, they're reading the book. My thought here is we see them turning the pages. It's only printed on one side, like a Xerox copier would do. And I thought, wouldn't the rules of act, wouldn't it be like a book? Why didn't the props department just print both sides like a real book?
I don't know, but I can tell you, I don't know
Yes.
how they came up with it, but it is printed in Ferengi.
Yes, I did notice that. I did notice the printing. That was great. I just wish they printed both sides of the page because I'm sure they did it on a, a printer. I wish they had flipped over the paper and printed the other side so it looked like a book as opposed to
Well, that would be a
stapling
human
binder.
book. This was a
That's
Ferengi.
there you
True.
go
That's
there you
true.
go
Ferengis don't print both.
they,
Okay. All
no
right,
they only
fine.
print one side.
I did like this scene where I like the framing. This is very a wide shot with the window perfectly symmetrical in the frame. And you see a lot of the scenes played in the two shot. This is an example of what I was saying. Renee knows how to frame comedy. It's not some weird lens or long lens shot or something. It's just simple. It lets the actors play the scene for the comedy that's there. You guys did a great job. It was
Quick
great.
question, is the smelling and licking of it, is that in the script or was
I don't
that?
know. When I watched it this time, I went, was that me or was that the script?
Well, you're wondering if it's in the script, and my first thought was, how many germs are on that book that he's licking? Did they clean it?
I've got a mouthful of prosthetics. I'm not worried about germs.
Okay, fine. So it does say Cork takes the book after looking at it and smelling it. Cork's trying to figure out what the riddle is, what the Negus meant with this book. So it says Cork examines the binding, the ink, the fabric of the paper. He smells it, taps on it, listens to it, and licks it, but still can't find an answer. So it
Interesting
does say,
idea.
but the way that you did all of those things, I mean, yeah, sure, they suggest you're doing these unexpected examinations, but your execution of that stage direction was great.
Thank you. Thank you.
In watching it now, how did you feel about that, Armin? Were you happy with the what you
It's too
did?
much. It's too
It's
much.
too it's too
No.
much spice, is what
This
you're
is too
telling
much
us.
spice.
Okay, so this is how you say from now on. TMS,
I
too much
understand.
spice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I understand appreciation of it. I get it. I get it. I get it. But you have to, I'm still in that same agenda place I was 30 years ago. I'm still trying to give gravitas to the species that I so screwed up on Next Generation.
I hear you. I
Well,
hear you.
you do that as well as entertain. I
So,
think
thank you.
you can do both things. And you know what? If you guys get pleasure, if everybody else gets pleasure out of watching my performance, that's all that counts. That's all that counts.
So, what I'm gathering from what you're saying, if you had kind of condensed it a little bit where you didn't lick the entire, binding, but just maybe tasted a little piece of it, that would have been enough, is what you're saying.
Probably. Less is always more. Yeah, less is
All
more.
right. All right.
But if it's funny
It
and you
was.
guys like it, don't,
I thought it
I
was
didn't say a
great.
word.
We
I didn't
loved
say a
it. We
word.
loved it. And we loved to be entertained by that scene. So we're okay with it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, Rom thinks the Negus has gone insane, and Cork insists, no, he's a genius. He's a genius. We're just going to put this book down. We're going to wait for him to tell us what the riddle is here, basically. So Quark's committed to there's just some evil genius
He
behind all
says that that Zek is his role model, is his idol, and that
this.
he's tried to model his life after Zek. So,
Don't gloss over when Rom reads rule number 285. A good deed is its own reward, and that's when Cork starts basically almost having a heart attack. He can't even
starts to
stand.
faint.
He's about to faint.
Well, we go to Quark's bar next. Quark is trying to solve this puzzle. Zek enters into the bar. He wants to buy the whole bar drinks, which is very unexpected for a Ferengi. And it's a full bar. So
It's a
there's a
very
lot
full
of people
bar.
there.
Yes. This is where Zek mentions he met some girl that was looking for Quark. She said her family has arrived with all the latinum, but the Negus decided to tell her where to buy these stem bolts, these self-sealing stem bolts for wholesale instead of from Quark. Quark is in shock. What's he going to do with these stem bolts? kind of walks off in
What's
shock.
It, 100 gross? Is it 100 gross?
Something of 100 like gross.
What am I going to do with 100 gross of self-sealing stem bolts?
Oh, yes.
I still can't say it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You get, let Nog sell them for you, right?
That's He's in shock. And then Negus talks to Rom and says he can't allow Quark to take advantage of this poor girl. Rom is very confused. And so Negus says, well, let me explain. Come take a walk with me. They head off for Negus to explain to Rom what this big change is.
Right.
And we see Meher Du pour a big glass of synthahol at the end. Drink the whole pint.
Meher Du. Yeah.
Meher Du is not speaking, as we have established before, but I love.
Not yet.
Exactly. I love that we hear he gets
this. Oh, my gosh.
I'm sure he, so did he.
I bet he did.
Yeah.
I bet he did. I wonder if he got paid as an actor.
He did.
Good.
There's no question in my mind. He was a principal.
He had to be. Good.
He didn't have to be. We've got another character who does the same thing, and he was never a principal.
Yeah.
Morn.
Morn was never a principal.
That's right.
And which is what I used to say to Mark. Tiny Ron, he gets paid as a principal. You're doing the same thing he is, and you're doing it more often. And there's something wrong here, Mark.
Yep. You know, the Screen Actors Guild has certain rules about that are based on dialogue mostly. And in Canada, the unions up here have different rules that are not based on dialogue, that have to do with the composition of the shot. If they're in a single, they cannot say anything. But if they're in a, I think it's less than three or less, that they get bumps, varying degrees of bumps. And if anything that, even if they are a waitress or a waiter, a principal speaks to them, and what they speak seems to change the direction of the scene or story in any way, that is a bump. Even if you're a server or something. So there's different rules up here, which I wish SAG could adopt some of those rules, because they seem more, as you're talking about, you know, Morn and things like that, that seems more applicable, because he should have been a principal.
He should have. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had an action figure, though.
Yes. Yes. He should have gotten paid more than background actor work.
Armin, did you ever see Tiny Ron when he was in full makeup and wardrobe for Voyager as the hunter species alien? No.
No.
Okay.
He was
the first Tarojan, basically.
Yep.
So, did a good job there.
Nice man. And on our rehearsals where he had nothing to say that we did on the weekend, Tiny was there.
Oh, my
God. What?
That's
he
amazing.
Came too.
Yeah, wow. He wanted to come. And I said, sure, Tiny, absolutely.
I love it.
Good for him.
Good for him. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we go to the cargo bay next. This is where we see the dartboard. I think it's in the cargo bay, right?
It is. But why are they playing in the cargo bay? There's no other place to play darts. I thought this was in Quarks that they would be playing darts.
You would think so, but we just left Quarks.
I think maybe just for not having to use background, maybe.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Because I read somewhere that eventually the dartboard is put
ends
into
up in
Quark's bar. Yes, that's the final resting place of that dartboard. But now you're right. No background actors needed in the cargo bay.
Very clever. Well, there's the dartboard with the flashing lights hanging on the wall. So when you hit the dartboard, a light will pop up.
Yep.
It's a sci-fi dartboard. Looks like an old-fashioned dartboard, except it has lights.
Yes.
But Bashir and Miles are playing darts because they've played hundreds of games of racquetball at this point since Keiko's been gone, and they've got to do something else. O'Brien brings up the prize, and as soon as he brings up the prize, Bashir misses his shot.
This to me is like trash talking in sports, right?
So yes,
each one of them says something to kind of mess, get into the head of the other person, and that's whenever the dart goes awry and hits the wrong part, that's because someone just got into the head of the other person. It's wonderful.
But again, the scene is kind of suggesting that there's more to this prize for Bashir than he's claiming, but we never really go there.
No.
Ever. The closest we go is later on with Odo. All right, we're back in the Ferengi story in Quark's quarters. Now there's a high-tech office set up in here. All the Ferengi waiters are scurrying about with pads and items. Quark comes in. That's a lot of Ferengi makeups, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. One of them, David, who's my stand-in, he's in makeup anyway, so that's easy.
It seemed like there were a half dozen more, maybe.
There were quite a few more, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's a big deal. Well, Rom is running this business. Quark asks what's going on. Rom says it's the sector headquarters for the Ferengi Benevolent Society. Clearly, Rom had a conversation with the Negus, and now he's all in on the Negus's benevolency plans.
As he should be. It will advance his career.
Yes, true.
It will put him in a better place. And he won't have to take guff from his brother anymore. And he's been promoted by the number one person in Ferengi society. He went from being a non-entity and now is the co-chair, we find out later, co-chair of this enterprise. Yes, he should be very excited. And he is.
And he is. Well, we do learn a little about it in Rom's quarters next. Rom is all in, we learn. I like this again, played in wide shots, like a play. It lets you guys act, Armin. It lets you guys,
It's
rather than the editors and the cameramen deciding.
comedy can't really be done in close-ups and single shots. You need to see the chemistry between the actors, and that's where the humor comes from.
Well, this scene's done beautifully like that. Rom says he wants to be part of the change in Ferengi society. This is where he reveals the Negus has made Quark co-chair. Quark says, well, he never told me anything about this. And Rom continues with explaining this to Quark, that once it's up and running, they're going to return with Zek to the sacred marketplace, announce the new rules to everyone. And Quark says, oh yeah? And then that's when they throw him off the Tower of Commerce, out of the top of the. And suddenly Rom's like, oh my gosh, you're right, Quark. He realizes Quark's right. Quark feels like something is very, very, very wrong.
This is the scene that I talked about earlier that I said I felt that Max really shined in a lot, and the interaction between Max and Armin was really, really good. It was this scene. This is the one that was so full for me.
It's a
I
great
love this scene.
turn. It's a great because. You see them come start in conflict and they end like-minded, and the turn that Rom has to make in the scene, and it's great. It's got comedy and real stakes here.
Max, despite the makeup, despite the fact that he often in this show anyway, plays the fool, is a very smart actor. Is a very smart actor and is able to vibrate in comedy that in ways that I am envious of. He's brilliant at farce.
He's great. He's good.
Now, he had another line prior to this, which we skipped over or didn't mention. I want to go back to it. I can't remember which scene it is. I guess it's when they first discovered that the rules have been changed. And Quark says, "Do you know what this means?" And Rom says, "It means we have to memorize a whole new set of rules." And for me, that got an extra laugh out of me because the only person I know who has all the rules memorized is Max.
Really?
In real life.
If you ask Max what number such and such, he can rattle off what
He
that
knows them
rule is.
all.
So when he said, "You have to memorize a whole new," I felt badly for Max, not for Rom, but for Max.
Because he would do
Yes, because he would do
it.
it.
That's
Oh, I
funny.
love it. Very good.
Well, Quark is very convinced something is really wrong, and so takes Zek to the infirmary where Bashir is checking Zek's ears, and Wally Shawn is laughing here at the top of the scene.
And if you look carefully at Sid, he's laughing too.
Oh, is
Is
he
he?
really?
Oh, he's not taking this scene seriously. He's having a ball of a time. He's really enjoying it a great deal.
Oh my goodness.
Well, I bet he was. He was doing the scene with Wally and you guys,
Exactly. Yeah,
and
exactly.
what a amazing opportunity. Well, I love the way the scene starts. Bashir's checked him out, says he seems healthy, nothing's wrong with him. Quark just doesn't believe it. He thinks Bashir is a quack, says he won't win this prize he's up for. Quark's very frustrated.
And less is more. Sid's minimal reaction to that dig is quite good. That's the
You're
thing
right.
that I'm saying, less is more. Less is more.
When does he have that dig?
I think Bashir responds when you say, oh, maybe we can make an appointment for you to see Dr. Wade.
That's
And, you
great.
know, a dig at Quark, and I mean, a dig at Bashir. And Bashir says, he doesn't react. He just says, oh, good luck. If I remember correctly, Nairobi is beautiful this time of year.
Yeah, that's his
So he
response.
digs back at very dryly. It's very, very funny. I also love where Zek offers a giant bar of latinum, a brick, it looks like, of
It is a
latinum.
brick. It is a brick, yeah.
Yes.
That's a lot of latinum.
A lot of latinum. Bashir's like, no, I can't accept that. And but Zek says, well, give it to charity then. And so
Right.
Bashir takes it, and Zek tells Julian to come to the ceremony at the Bajoran shrine where he's gonna give a gift to the Bajoran people. So suddenly there's a new twist in our story. He's got a big gift for the Bajorans.
Right.
So many needy people, so little time, Zek says. We cut to the airlock where Quark and Rom are breaking into the Negus's shuttle. They've got to figure out what has happened to the Negus, and he needs to know what Zek is going to be giving the Bajorans. That's
Yeah.
when Mehar Dhu arrives. He's got this, looks like a weapon pointed
Yeah, it
at them.
does. Yeah, it does look like a
Yeah.
weapon.
And they think it's a weapon. They think he's going to shoot them, but instead he pushes the button, it opens the door. He waves them in. I had a thought when in this scene, the first time I've thought of it. Do you remember the Silent Bob character? Kevin Smith made this low budget movie Clerks where there was a character who never spoke,
That's
Silent
right.
Bob. And then Silent Bob was in all their movies after that.
Oh, yeah.
I suddenly thought, oh, I wonder if, because that was around this time. It was the mid 90s when Clerks came out and it was all at the same time. And I thought, oh, I wonder if they just thought the Negus should have a Silent Bob character. Because it's kind of it was the same time,
Or was it
should
the other way around? Was Kevin Smith watching DS9? He thought, hey,
have.
I should be Silent Bob.
I don't know. We'd have to go
You
back
have
and
to
look
look
at
at
the
the
timeline.
timeline, yes.
Fans, listeners, you have homework.
Someone already knows the answer to this, I'm
Yeah, I'm
sure.
sure they do.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith knows.
Yeah, Kevin Smith knows.
Mehar Dhu brings him in. They go inside the shuttle, and Mehar Dhu shows them this gift. It's one of the missing Bajoran orbs of the prophets. Bum, bum,
Yeah.
bum. Go to commercial. We come back. Quark explains the orb, explains everything, he tells Rom. Zek's behavior, the new rules, everything. And Rom's trying to break it open. Quark says it's too dangerous. They kind of struggle. It pops open. This bright light comes out, and off goes Quark into a vision. How is this filming this whole vision? These are confusing to me. Like, they make my head hurt sometimes.
They did something with the film itself that they shot it a
Yes.
certain way to make it look disorienting.
Yeah, and the jumping around in these visions, and I know that's the design, that's the structure they've
Yeah,
set up from the
it
pilot.
mimics the original episode
Yeah.
where Sisko meets the wormhole
Can I
aliens.
read a little
Yeah.
something for you for both of you?
Yes,
Here we
please.
go. To recreate the same visual style for Quark scenes in the wormhole as had been seen in the pilot episode Emissary, director René Auberjonois and director of photography Jonathan West went back to the original shooting method as developed by Emissary director David Carson and then director of photography Marvin Rush. As had Rush in the pilot, West overexposed the images and used diffusion filters to create the dazzling white, which seems to bleed onto the actors' faces. However, while the white is the same as in Emissary, there is a subtle difference to the rest of the wormhole footage. Visual effects coordinator David Takamura used two versions of every shot, a slightly out-of-focus version and a clean version. He layered the clean version on top of the out-of-focus version to create an effect that is not quite out of focus, but is not quite focused correctly either.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And of course, when you're
Interesting.
acting it, none of that is there. You just
No,
act.
you guys are just doing your thing. Yeah.
But when you're acting it, there's a linear progression of dialogue, but yet it happens all over the place. And in the pilot, that sort of idea was explained because the prophets don't exist in time or space the way
In a
we do,
linear existence,
in a
right? Yeah.
linear existence. Whereas now, and I know they have to keep the same rules, but it was sometimes tricky for me to understand the jumping
Sure.
around. Was it hard to film? Was it
No, I
confusing?
don't remember it being hard to find. There is a section where I'm going around a table between people's shoulders. I remember, I had to hit the mark exactly right so that I would be in the right place. But no, it's just bits and pieces. You just do it. What I find, this is the most interesting part of the show for me, and where it takes a quantum leap in my appreciation. I love what the juxtaposition of who the aliens are portraying and what they're saying. That to me was quite brilliant. Quite brilliant. I thought,
You mean the
kudo to the.
characters who got the prophet's lines? Which actor or character
Yeah. For
was
instance, I
delivering?
remember specifically the alien pretending to be Rom says about the Ferengi, we need to, I can't remember exactly, but we need to never associate with this race again.
Oh,
And
right.
I thought, oh,
Oh, yeah.
that's clever. And a lot of those, I remember also some of the things that the Kira alien said were, oh, yeah, that's indicative of actually how Kira feels. So I found the lines that they put into their mouths and who they chose to say the lines was brilliant, was really quite brilliant.
I do want to say this first vision is just Quark and Zek.
Oh,
And
that's
then
right, that's
you,
right, that's
that's
right,
right.
that's right.
Then you
Okay.
come back.
I do remember that being disorienting.
Okay.
I
Yeah,
do
Zek is the
remember
first
that
one is
being
just Zek
disorienting.
jumping around. You're on the spinning wheel and he's upstairs and
Oh,
he's downstairs.
yeah,
And
he pops up everywhere, right, Robbie? He's not in. Okay, yeah.
But he basically says in this, Zek tells you that you have to take a leap of faith. So he brings up this idea of faith, which is going to give you the prophet's thing. And this is where he opens up the new book of rules of acquisition. And there's a crowd that appears in the bar and they're all applauding. So it does seem in this first vision like Zek is saying, oh, this is what the prophets told me, but that's what Quark puts together when he first comes back. I got to go talk to the prophets, basically.
And just technically, one of the things Rene did as a director is put Zek on the top level of Quark's bar. There are three levels to Quark's bar. There's the ground floor that we're familiar with. There's the second level where all the holosuites are, and then there's the third level that no one ever uses. It's up there, but no one ever uses it. Rene used it. That's where he put
Zek
Wally way
jumps,
up there.
and then he
Oh.
jumps over the railing in this scene. There was a stunt in this scene. Like this
Yeah, I would
was,
assume my
yes.
stunt man Georgie did it. So, here's to Georgie for having done it.
Well, even Zek had a Wally had a stunt double in this.
Did he really?
Yeah,
I
it
would
was
assume that
Dennis
George was the
Matto.
double for both of us.
No, it said
Oh,
Dennis Matalone.
Dennis couldn't. It's too tall to be Wally.
I know that, but that's what I read, though. That's why I was confused. I was
Yeah,
like, Dennis
I
Matalone
don't.
as
It's
Wally.
possible. It's sci-fi. Anything is possible.
Well, Matalone's not that tall either, though, Robbie, right?
Who's
Matalone
that?
was Dennis Matalone was not that tall.
Well,
He
he
was
was probably
taller than me.
5'8", 5'9",
And Wally
probably.
is shorter than
Five.
I am, so
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Dennis doubled everybody, even if he didn't look anything like
But
him.
Dennis had a brother-in-law,
Love Dennis.
George,
Oh, that's
and
right.
George doubled me. That's why I'm
Oh,
thinking
okay.
Georgie did both.
Okay.
Could
Got
have
it.
been. Could have been.
All right.
Well, yeah, Quark comes out of the vision. Quark realizes this gift was from the prophets to Zek, that they put this the prophets put this idea of new rules in his head. They asked Mehardu, but he can't speak because he only talks to his master. He's following the rules. So Quark goes to try and break into Zek's personal logs. And we see a bit later in the airlock that Quark has read the logs. And Zek got the orb from someone in Cardassia 3. He got the prophet's orb and decided to head to the wormhole. But his logs show he was only there for a few minutes and left. And Quark says the Negus recorded that the future looks bright in his personal logs. So he must have seen the future. He went there to see the future so that he could predict, economic markets and things like that. That was his intention. But then something happened while he was there that changed everything. And Quark has an idea to make it right. Rom asks if it involves him. Quark says, not really. Rom says, I like it. Which made me laugh. Very funny. Very
Is
funny.
that's very funny. That was my favorite joke in
Yes, it was. I
the
like it.
I like it. This is the benefit of having hindsight. I'm sure the writers weren't thinking about this. I certainly wasn't. You couldn't have. None of us could have thought this. But actually, this prophecy does come true.
What?
Which, in what way? What
Which
do you mean?
prophecy are you talking about?
Not going to tell
Oh,
you. Not going to tell
this
you.
is a spoiler.
I'm sure it wasn't
Ooh.
intended, but when I look back on
Oh.
these 7 years, I go,
Ferengis are going to change. Something's going to happen. Oh, Garrett, we got stuff to look forward to here.
We do.
All right, we go to the Replimat next. Odo joins Bashir. Odo comes down the spiral staircase. Renee gave himself a nice fancy entrance.
Yes, he did.
Worthy of a
Not just
movie
did he
star.
come down the staircase, he has to circle around the
Circle
staircase.
around.
Really, Renee?
Yes.
It's too much. It's
He
too
gave
much.
himself, it was like a movie star entrance.
Maybe
Renee's
too much.
directing. Why
Yeah,
not?
just too much spice.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little too much spice. Loretta Young. I don't, you guys are too
It
young
did.
to remember. It's
It
just
felt like
coming
old
down the
Hollywood.
staircase.
Who's Loretta Young? Is that
Loretta
some...
Young was a movie actress, and she had a TV show back in the 50s or 60s. I can't
Yeah,
remember.
fifties, I
And
think.
she
Yeah.
always used to come in down this long staircase.
Oh,
She'd make a Loretta
yes.
Young entrance.
Yep. Renee
Love
gave
it.
himself a Loretta Young entrance. But he comes down, joins Bashir. Odo says he's heard from a lot of random people that Wade is not going to win this prize. I love this whole bit, by the way. It's a, you know, I have a friend who has a cousin who has a friend who knows an assistant and one of the members. And according to my friend, her friend heard something. It's a classic Abbott and Costello bit kind of thing. It's very funny. But it works. It always works.
What happens when the director is the actor? Who's back in Video Village? Who's watching? The
On
first
this on the
AD,
Star
right?
Trek shows, nobody. Like,
What?
I mean, yeah, the first
Or
AD is watching the
Marvin.
DP,
Yeah, the
yes,
DP.
or Marvin or Jonathan
Jonathan. Jonathan.
Jonathan on this show. But Star Trek, our generation of Star Trek was very different than shows are now. Nowadays, most shows have a writer on set, a writer producer who's there to assist the director with interpretations or give notes on, you know, producer notes on things and clarify things. And if they had had a writer on set when Renee was directing, or Avery was directing, or any of your actors that directed, or when I was directing, if there had been a writer on set, it would have been so helpful. Because then I could have turned to the writer and said, did we get what we intended? What you were looking for? Was my performance delivering the tone and the story beats that we want? But there was no writers. It was left up to the DP and the AD, who should not be interpreting those kind of story nuances. That should be, you know, an upper level producer helping that actor.
So, Robbie, you're saying that nowadays there that writer is there for the entire time you are filming.
I mostly do shows not in Los Angeles, not based in Los Angeles anymore. So usually the shows that I do on location, a writer will fly in, usually a day or two before we start filming. The writer of that episode will fly into town,
Oh,
check
the
into a
actual
hotel.
writer. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be there for your final production meeting so they can make sure that all the choices we've made in terms of props or blah, 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 that aligns with the vision of the script. And then they'll be there on set every day from crew call to wrap. And they will sit in Video Village. And if I'm directing, I'll turn to that writer after the end of a scene and say, you good with this? You know, and during the process, during the takes, I might turn to that writer, or the writer may turn to me and say, hey, I think they should tone down the anger. It shouldn't be so angry yet in the story. Or, you know, so we have a collaboration, to go back to our earlier conversation. It's very helpful.
Well, at the end of this scene with Odo and Bashir, there is that little bit where Odo kind of figures out that Bashir is writing his acceptance speech, which is now referencing what happened with the TNG cast and crew feeling like they were going to win it. So, again, these inside little tidbits of information are quite interesting.
Yeah, I like the reference to TNG, the Easter egg, if you will, of that idea. But in terms of Bashir's character arc in this,
There's
this
no
is
development whatsoever, is what you're saying.
zero. They're suggested that he cared about this more than he's revealed. It's suggested, but we never hear about that.
We
Other
don't
people
understand
don't talk
why.
about it. No one We don't hear other people saying, wow, you know, it's strange. You'd think he'd care about this. There's nothing, no
Nothing.
attention given to it. We get a little bit in this scene, and then we go back to Quark's quarters. Zek is talking to someone on a monitor. I did like this shot. The shot opens with the door opening, and the camera pushes past that open door and goes in slowly during Zek's monologue. And then at the end, Zek ends the phone call and looks up and says, how can I help you boys? And that's when we see whose point of view we were in. That shot coming through the doors was Mehardu and Quark and Rom putting a sack over his head at the end of the scene.
And I must say, that opening shot, one of the things I thought, oh, Renee just fell in love with that window. Because behind Zach is, I mean, he could have put the desk anywhere.
Yeah.
But he made sure that the desk was in front of the window. That window and just became a huge Christmas gift to Renee. He just loved focusing on that window. And in fact, that shot in an earlier scene of Rom in the window reading the book is one of the most iconographic photos ever taken or shots ever taken on our show. It appears everywhere. And
really?
It is one of my favorite shots from the show, but it does appear. It's not just me. Everybody knows that shot.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Interesting.
With the star field behind it.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Renee had good instincts in terms of composition and framing in this episode. Yeah. Much, not to take a shot at any other directors, but much better than a lot of other first time directors.
Because he was living there already for 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I do like the whole dialogue with Zach, how generous he is. He's like, I never knew solar flares could be so devastating to a planet's agriculture.
He's so now empathetic.
Let me see. At current market rate, 2,000 tons of barley would cost me 189 bars of gold-pressed platinum, but it's worth it. So it's like it's something he would never do in like a billion years, but here he is spending 189 bars of his own platinum to help out some alien race who lost their crop for this season, right? It's like, wow. Oh, so anyway, it's kind of fun.
He's a brilliant actor. He's
very
actor.
Funny.
Oh, yeah.
I have a question, Armin. So the next scene, we're in the corridor. Mehardu is carrying, Tiny Ron is carrying Wally Shawn supposedly in a bag. There's somebody in the bag.
No, I don't think so.
What's moving
It's
around?
Moving, though.
I still don't think it.
I don't think so either, but I'm like, how did they? Or maybe Tiny Ron had something that we didn't even notice. Puppeting.
I have no memory of that, but I just can't imagine that there's something in the bag.
I can't either.
Not only because it's bad for the person in the bag, it's bad for Tiny Ron. He's got to carry a person on his shoulder. It's not like he's on his shoulder. It's a bag and with someone below the shoulder.
Yeah.
That would be very hard to do. And
it was very
I just
convincing,
can't imagine.
Though.
Yeah, it was very convincing. But
it was very convincing.
Just, I certainly know Wally wasn't in the bag. That's for sure.
If it wasn't Wally,
it
would
could have
say
been David. If it was someone, it would have been David. Maybe a stuntman. Maybe, but no. But George is too big.
Okay, it has to be someone small and diminutive, basically.
Yeah, that's why David might stand in Broik, one of the characters on the show. It could have been David, but I don't think it was anyone.
Can I give you my theory? Here's my theory.
It wasn't you, was it, Garrett?
No, it wasn't me. But I feel like if Aaron was there, Eisenberg was there. He's such a team player that he would be like, I'll do it.
He would have.
I'll jump in that bag.
Aaron would have done that. Absolutely. But I guarantee you they weren't going to pay him to be in a bag.
No.
I'm quite sure.
I think that I would offer a different, because it did move. I would offer a different solution. That Tiny Ron had this bag, but he had something that could puppet it so that when he turned around and, you know, and we saw movement in the bag, that Tiny Ron was literally doing something.
Pushing a button or pulling
that
a thing.
Pushed something,
that
pulling
made
a string
move.
That made something move.
Okay.
Because it was very convincing. But
it was.
But he didn't look like there was much effort to holding a heavy bag.
Right.
Which if there had been a human in there, there should have been effort. A lot of effort.
But Tiny Ron is a massive human being, so you know.
But it's one thing to carry someone on your shoulder. It's another one when it's halfway down your back. That's a different
it's pulling
pull
backwards.
Altogether.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
puppeting. I go with puppeting.
Okay, puppeting.
My money's on puppeting,
and not Aaron Eisenberg. Okay,
nope.
Fine.
Nope.
All right.
I do like that Quark checks on Zach in the bag, though. Zach says he forgives him. And then Quark's response, though, is, see, he is in trouble. That Zach would forgive you for this is just impossible.
It's great because this just he's so calm, too. Don't worry, Quark. I forgive you. It's just so opposite of who he really is. But again, that's how amazing Wally Shawn is, because you bought everything that he's doing in this episode.
He's also humming inside the bag.
Yeah, he's humming
forever.
A song. Yeah.
Is he just making up a song, probably?
So that song, was he humming during the actual take itself?
I don't think so.
Okay, so it was all in post.
Because when I was watching it this time around, I went, who's doing that? Where's that noise coming from?
Who's doing the humming?
And that must have been post, I'm quite sure.
Must have been.
But it's still Wally's voice in ADR.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly, yeah.
That's very funny. It is very funny. Yeah, so they get inside the Negus shuttle. Rom says, "Brother, this is a very brave thing you're doing, taking the Negus back to the wormhole. I wish I could come with you, but I can't. Goodbye." Takes off. Very
Now,
funny.
that line prompted something in me. It has
Yes.
nothing to do with the episode, but it did prompt something in me. Okay.
Yeah.
Quark's going off to meet the wormhole aliens. That's his intent in this scene.
Yeah.
Rom and pretty much all the waiters are all in the Benevolent Association. They're
Right.
all manning the phones and making deals. Who's looking after the bar?
Who is looking after the bar?
Oh.
Morn is just helping himself.
Yeah.
He
And I thought,
is.
really, who's running the bar? I mean, Quark is always concerned about the running of the bar. Who's running the bar?
I don't know. Maybe you're stand-in? Maybe
But
Broik?
he's in the Benevolent Association.
Oh,
I
he's
saw
there in the.
David Broik is in the Benevolent
Yes.
Association. He's one
All
of the
right.
people in the...
And that
So
would have
who's
been a
running the bar?
scene in the Bashir storyline. They could have been in there and where's Quark? Why don't we have any
When we get
service?
to that, that is exactly my answer.
Okay. Rom leaves and Mehardu leaves and Zek is still in the bag and Quark says to Zek, "Don't worry, everything's going to be all right."
Sure, everything's going to be fine. I know how to operate this ship. I've never been on it before. I've never learned how to run this thing, but we'll be fine.
Well,
We'll be fine.
yeah. Well, let me ask you, because the next shot's in space, we see this Ferengi shuttle. We see the Negus' shuttle. It's very cool. Have we seen this before?
It's hard for
Yes.
me to tell. I've seen that shuttle many times, but
We
it's 30 years, so I don't remember where I
this
first
feels
saw it.
like the, I
We
don't remember
have.
seeing the Ferengi shuttle before. This shape.
Yes, we have, because if you recall in a prior episode,
Did I mention it then?
No,
Did
the
we talk about it?
actual, I'm just saying, the Grand Nagus says, and use my shuttle, Quark, in one of the things where he goes to have do business in the Gamma Quadrant. So we see the shuttle actually.
Oh, we did see it.
In
You're right.
this is the alien race that they're so aggressive that they fight each other. Remember that he tried to deal
Dorsai,
with?
the Dusai or
Yes.
something
Yeah.
like that.
They have the white and red paint on their face. That
Yes.
was that episode, and
That's
he
right. We
took
did see the shuttle
we've
before.
already seen the
Well, it's
shuttle.
cool here. It's super cool. And in fact, I don't know if we talked about it, but inside the cockpit, I love that globe that looks like R2-D2 to me.
Yeah,
Do
the
you know what I'm
top
talking
side of
about? That
deep. Yeah.
white globe.
That is
It
the top
looks
of
like a
R2-D2, basically.
it's R2-D2.
It is.
Absolutely, it
It
is.
is.
Very
Well,
funny.
now I know who's running the ship. Okay, that makes sense then.
Thank God R2-D2 is running it. But the space shot's very cool. Goes inside the wormhole. Back inside the cockpit, Quark lets Zek out of the bag, the sack there. And the shuttle is shaking. Quark's very nervous because
Because
it's
it's turbulence.
dangerous.
It isn't
Yeah.
Quark that's shaking, it's Armin that's
It's
shaking.
Armin that's shaking.
Because he does
Yes.
not like turbulence.
Well, Zek comes out of the bag, tells Quark that he has to open the box if he wants to talk to the prophets. I like his line here where he says, "You better hurry, though. I got the dampening field on this ship for a substantial discount."
That's
So not the
great.
best dampening field, not the best
No.
shields. You better hurry up. Goes into the white limbo. This is where he meets all the prophets. So this is where everybody, Dax and Emmy, our guest star, is even there. Kira's there. Sisko's there.
There's only one person who isn't there, which to me was obvious. And of course, he couldn't be there. Or he could have, but he wasn't.
Who
Odo.
was it?
Odo's not there.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but you're
Oh.
right. Yeah, he should have been there
Yeah, it should have been there.
story-wise.
Yeah.
Yes, this is also the first instance where they refer to Sisko, the alien Sisko, as the Sisko.
That's
They don't
Sisko.
ever say the
And
Sisko
they also
before this.
called the Zek.
The
The Zek.
Zek, yes, the Quark, the yeah. Basically, in this scene, the prophets, describe how they de-evolved Zek back to a time when the Ferengi weren't so driven by prophets.
And
By
that's the first time we
prophet,
learn about that.
by prophet, not prophets as in gods, but prophet as in money. That Ferengi at one point were not,
Acquisitive.
yes.
I love that. Acquisitive.
They do say that they were less aggressive, they were less adversarial, and they say in the scene they threatened to devolve Quark back to the same way they did with Zek. But Quark brilliantly argues in this scene, I think, that basically his argument is wanting to better yourself, wanting to make profit, wanting to improve your life is a good thing. And that 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 helps evolve people, that helps people to grow. I love the idea, the argument, the Ferengi argument that Quark makes in this scene is great, is really awesome.
And as I watched and realized that they had changed the Zek, that they were aggressively going to change Quark as well, the people that are really adversarial and aggressive are the wormhole aliens.
Yes. Yes,
Oh,
exactly.
oh. From my character's point of view, they're the aggressive ones.
Yeah.
They're the adversarial
They want
ones.
to fundamentally change who you are.
That's right.
Yeah.
It is, forgive me for crossing lines here, but it is directly against the Prime Directive.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are
Yeah.
meddling in somebody else's culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but they have no, I mean, the wormhole aliens have no reference point
No,
to the Prime
absolutely. That's what I mean by
Directive.
crossing. That's what I mean. I mean
Mixing the Starfleet morals
I'm
with
used,
profit
yes.
morals, but yes,
Yeah.
totally
They
makes sense.
have in my, again, I'm very prejudiced. So they've crossed the line, and not that I want this scene, but I think Quark should go back and tell Kira that her gods are not perfect.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I hear you.
Well, the only thing that convinced them to send him back is when he says, if you change me, then this curiosity to better ourselves, this curiosity is going to bring more Ferengi back. So if you don't want to deal with us, you should leave me alone.
And why is it that Sisko in the pilot episode, his philosophy, which is different than theirs, they accept that. And in fact, there he is, there's Sisko tossing the baseball up and down right out of the first episode. And yet the Ferengi, and you said it's a good argument. That I can't be sure of
I
because
think it's
I'm
a
too
great
close to
argument.
it, but you think it's a great argument. So why can't they see it as a good argument?
Yeah. Yeah,
Why is it
the
Sisko's
argument.
argument is okay, we can accept that, but the guy with the big ears, we can't accept that.
Yeah.
We can't
Yeah.
accept the troll's argument.
His argument. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but then the flip side is be they accept Sisko because he has been designated as the emissary, whereas the Ferengi, they're not familiar with the Ferengi at all. I don't know.
But they
That's.
weren't familiar with humans either, or at least Earthlings, when they first meet Sisko in the
Until
pilot.
he. Okay.
I mean, he isn't the emissary until after he meets the
Right,
aliens.
right, right. Okay.
Well, they do send him back. He wins this chess match. Quark wins this chess match.
I think they're just bored with him. They don't see him anymore.
They do say your linguistics, what do they say? Something like,
Linguistic communication is tiresome. And Quark says, my
tiresome.
point exactly, which is why I think you should
And
send me back. And before he even finishes his sentence, he's back. It was like, well, yeah, you're right.
he just wears
Speak no
them out.
more. Yeah.
Get him out of here.
It's a good strategy. It works.
You annoyed them to the point where they're like, yeah, we're going to switch it back for sure. But the valid point was this. You said to them, if you do switch me to the same as Grand Nagus Zek, there will be other Ferengi will come here and ask the same
Yeah.
question, why is Quark like this? So it's just to stop. It'll be a never-ending loop. So just please stop this from happening. Do not change me, and definitely put Grand Nagus Zek back to the way he was.
And being able to see the future, wouldn't they know that? I mean, the
Yes,
moment
they
he
should
said
know
it, they
that.
should
Yeah.
know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's my takeaway from this episode. Never get in a debate with Quark because he is tenacious
He is
and
tenacious.
clever, and he will just wear you out with good argument after good argument, and you'll just,
Yeah,
don't, I
there's
don't.
one moment, but not one, but there's a moment, very slight, in the going around the table and where that happens, and I go, good for you, Armin. That's a good choice.
Yeah.
Where the argument is trying to think, what am I going to say next? And he comes up with something. Yeah, I can
Yeah.
see the moment where I'm going,
I'm not
what am I
giving
going to
up.
say
I'm not
next?
giving up.
This
Yeah.
is what I'm going to say.
Nice.
He's passing around someone and uses that little pause to be inspired for his next argument.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does make me think sometimes I'll be directing and I will give an actor an adjustment and they'll say, "Well, no, I don't think my character should do that because blah blah." And I have to think of another way to do it. Same. I have to pull a Quark there. I'm like, what's my next way to put this? How can I say this differently? Because we got to get this note. I got to get this change. How am I going to say it?
Because you've got the writer producers there. I mean, you're the Brutus,
It's
but saying
exactly.
we have to have this.
Yeah.
How can I quirk this actor is what
How
Ron
can
is
I quark this
thinking.
actor? That's going to be my new thing. Yeah. In my book of directing that I write,
You bring
I
that up?
will, yes,
Perfect.
I will term that the quirk the actor.
I love
Yes.
it.
Back in the shuttle, though, Zek is back to normal, so is Quark.
It's a mystery. Has Zek come back to normal? There's a moment where we don't know.
Yes, there is a moment at the top. Quark, are you all right? Seems concerned, seems like that empathetic
Yeah.
Zek that we thought we had been seeing this whole episode. And then Quark says, I think so. What about you? And that's when Zek turns and says, oh, stop toadying up to me.
Yeah.
Now we know he's back to normal.
Well, you kind of, but you especially know because at the end of that sentence, he says, I have an orb to sell to the Bajorans, not to
Yes.
give to them as a present. So you know
Yeah.
he's back.
And you hug Zek in this scene.
Yeah.
Nice hug.
Yeah.
Easy to do.
Yeah, and he's your hero too.
Yeah.
Your hero is back.
You're wrinkling my suit.
Back in the wardroom, they're all watching this award ceremony for Bashir. He does not win.
Nope.
Everybody scatters.
Picket fences won. That's
Picket
what won.
fences won. Dax tells Julian that he seems to be handling this very well, and Julian admits, actually, I'm not. Believe me, I'm not, he says.
But to Robbie's point, we don't know why he's not. We don't know why
Why?
why didn't you care in the
It
beginning,
didn't.
and why do you care now? We don't even know. We're clueless.
That's kind of a surprise because we don't know much about his feelings. He's been kind of numb to this whole journey, this whole story. So we go to the airlock next. Zek is preparing to leave, wants to make sure all the records of this whole thing have been destroyed. Doesn't want anybody to know about it. Or he might get thrown off the Tower of Profit or whatever it was called.
Tower of Commerce.
Tower of
Tower of
Commerce.
Commerce, yes. He sneezes on you guys, which I thought was an extra bit. I don't know if that was in the script or not, but it was funny. Sneezes and leaves. Sneezes right on you and then leaves. Quark wishes he'd made some profit for all this trouble. And that's when Rom says, well, actually, you did.
Oh,
Rom
wait. Before you
reveals.
get to that, though, Robbie, when
Yes.
Zek says, are you sure you've destroyed every last copy of the revised rules of acquisition? Rom goes, well, the only place the new rules exist is inside my head. And at that point, Zek sort of like gets serious, thinking
Mehardu
like,
puts his big hand on
yeah,
Rom's
oh,
shoulder.
yeah. That's right. Like he's about to take him out. You know what I'm saying? And then that's when Quark sticks up for his brother. Don't worry. Within a week, he'll have forgotten them all. And so he releases
He
his
saves him.
grasp. He saved. You just saved your bro.
There's a love-hate relationship between the
For
brothers, yes.
sure. Yeah.
There's a love-hate, but in this scene, Rom reveals that maybe they did make some profit off of this, that Rom was the administrator of the Benevolent Association. And he admits he embezzled some money. And Quark is very impressed with that. Says father would be so proud. And they walk off arm in arm. So it's
Yeah.
more love than hate. That's what I take away from this episode.
And did either of you feel that there was a nod to, oh God, what is it? Humphrey Bogart and
Oh, yes,
as they walked away,
Casablanca or something.
Casablanca. Yeah.
Yes.
I just got a sense of that.
It had a classic heroes walking off into the sunset kind of vibe. And so, yeah, it was
Well,
great.
whatever it was satisfying to watch that. So the bonding between the two of you is wonderful. And to know that, yeah, Rom actually does have the lobes. He embezzled from Grand Nagus and
Yes.
Zek's personal fortune, which is
And that
huge.
we, and that's the, again, this is the beginning of Rom turning into a mensch, or at least an entity unto himself. And
Yeah.
I'm really good, happy to see that. Really
Yeah.
happy to see that.
They're great.
Lesson theme slash moral of this
Yeah.
episode. What do you say, Robert Duncan McNeil?
What I wrote down is the drive to improve and be rewarded for that improvement is in all of us. It's how we all evolve. It's universal in a way, whether it's animals or plants or, it's Darwinian in a way. You want to improve. You want to better yourself. It's the argument that Quark makes to the prophets. It's even the essence of the Bashir story in a way that could have been. This is where I'll put my frustration with that story altogether. If that's the theme, that we all have this innate drive to improve and be rewarded for that, to be, that the reason we try to improve is to survive or to better our living conditions. If that's the reason, then Bashir's blowing off the, oh, I don't need an award. is bullshit because he does have that same innate drive to be rewarded, to improve himself. So why wasn't that fleshed out in a way that could have echoed Quark's argument to the prophets? It would have made that argument so much richer if we had seen that theme played out in Bashir's story a little better. So,
okay. Yeah. I like that. I like that. It's very deep.
There you go.
Armin, what would your lesson be from this episode?
Well, mine actually is pretty close to what Robbie just said. This is what I wrote. Ambition and greed are first cousins and spring from the same prejudice that more is preferable to less, which is a quote from the show.
Interesting. Interesting way you worded that. The same prejudice. There's a bias that one is
There's
better.
There's a bias.
Yeah.
But he...
Interesting.
The ambition, yes. If we are to assume that Bashir is disappointed that he didn't win, it's because he had ambitions. And greed is essential to the Ferengi culture. But they come from the same place. They're both prejudices. It's probably both a prejudice and a virtue.
I agree. I think that's what Quark argued, is it's a virtue.
Yeah.
That this is, you know, the greed or the, you know, profit motive that we have is a virtue because it helps us better ourselves, helps our people better ourselves. Yeah. What do you got there? You got a comedy one, Garrett? I feel
No,
like a
I
comedy
don't.
Lesson is coming out of you.
I don't have a comedy one. It's interesting because I was kind of struggling with this one. Like, you know, I was trying to come up with a serious one. But then in the actual recap and discussion, when Armin brought up the fact that inside the wormhole, that the wormhole aliens or the prophets, they talk about how, you know, well, we couldn't stand how aggressive Grand Zek was, so we changed him. But Armin mentioned they're pretty aggressive on their own in changing him to begin with. So I guess my lesson or caveat is that those who live in glass houses shouldn't be throwing stones or whatever
that's it. Yeah,
did I say that incorrect?
People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Yeah.
What's our Patreon poll theme moral lesson of this episode?
Yes, that is submitted by Sherry K, and that is if never keep profit a good smile honesty. So they left it at that.
They got a comedy.
They got the
comedy lesson.
Yay.
Yes. Thank you for a great episode, Armin.
Yes.
I really enjoyed this. I don't care what you rate it. I don't care all your bits and quibbles and bits about it. I enjoyed it.
Great. Yeah. That's what counts. That's really
one of my
what
favorites.
Counts. That's what
we,
counts.
We
one
were,
of
my favorites so far.
Robbie and I were both thoroughly entertained. So
agreed.
That's what we want to say to you. And we want to thank you for joining us for this recap and discussion. Thank you for your honest opinion about this episode. And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.